All right, matchup set. Big Brother. The big old Big Brother Bully Bruins. I actually haven't been able to mentally check into this quite yet because I've been so prepared for Florida for like a month.
Yeah, I feel like everyone was just pretty locked in.
Yeah, it's like Florida, 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 Florida. And then last night it was like, so the Bruins are down 2-0. The Leafs were up, so I went, okay. But hey, if they, you know, the Bruins lose and Panthers win, it's the Bruins. Some people, I'm going to have old McKee stroll in here at some point today to have a little check-in with your boy because he was off Leafs Talk last night. By the way, go listen to yesterday's episode because it was really great. Bourne and I, you know, went into a bunch of different things that were not just involved with the game. He's a believer of the conspiracy that the Bruins tanked for this matchup, that they threw their final two games of the season in order to play the Toronto Maple Leafs. And if you're Sheldon Keefe, you're pushing that around too. You better be telling everybody in that dressing room, like, hey, they did that on purpose, and you better know it. Remember how they beat you all the time? Remember how they keep beating you? They think that they've got that psychological edge on you. Maybe, just maybe, that gets you out of the mental vice grip that I think the Boston Bruins have over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Maybe, just maybe, just maybe, just maybe. Okay, maybe that helps you. But anyways, there's something. So last night during the post game, Sheldon Keefe, I just read the transcript. I haven't heard the tone of some of these things. But Sheldon Keefe said something when they asked him about the Bruins series. He said something like, game 82 tomorrow, and that ended the media conference. Like, he was like, I'm not doing this yet. I'm not going there. We're going to have plenty days of Bruins and back and forth and blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to do a little bit of that today. Like, I'm not going to flesh out this entire series and do like a series preview. That'll be tomorrow. I'll deep dive more into this actual matchup. But yeah, I think that I am kind of curious how Leaf fans feel, because to me, it was a bit apathetic in terms of who the actual matchup was. Like, both scenarios were really, really difficult. Neither of these two options was like, oh wow, Panthers or Bruins. What a
cakewalk.
Yeah. What laughing. A fun time. Yeah. What an interesting, great time this is. So, and yet I kind of think of people are a little tiny, they got to be a little bit more confident about this one. Like, I don't know. There's something more aesthetically pleasing about looking at these two teams. There's sure. something about a little bit more like, hey, slay the demons and mm-hmm. this is the path. I don't know. I don't mind it. I'll just say that. I do not mind it. I do not mind it. But yeah, Sheldon Keefe, game 82 tonight or whatever he said to wrap up that media conference, a touch of that. But first, I do want to say this is I did see, again, I only read the transcript. Mike, we got the clip. Okay, so I want to hear Sheldon's answer on Austin Matthews playing tonight, because that is now the big question before the Bruins stuff. It's like, there's actually,
I'm not sure what
wait,
you're referring.
Wait, I'll throw to you. That's how this works. Mike's new. I'll tell you, Mike, when to play the clip. You don't decide while I'm talking. We still have something to be settled here. It's a meaningless game. And we saw yesterday that it was like a little chippy, you know? There was moments. Seen some lumber and some people's spines. I think there were probably like four scrums in that hockey game. The Panthers almost felt like they were trying to get a jump on the Leafs to say, hey, we're going to rough you up a little bit, you know? If this is a playoff series, then we want to have it feel like an 8-game playoff series if we so happen to draw you. Luckily, nobody gets hurt. It is a back-to-back. I think that a young, healthy, spry, in his prime athlete like Austin Matthews is not going to wear down from this extra game. But, like, ultimately, what we're doing here is saying that we really want the pretty number, the round number, the circle. We want to see a circle.
I love a circle.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
Well, like, it's a cool circle.
It's really pleasing.
And I admit, I like the circle too. Okay? I don't want to pretend like I'm above anybody here. I really like the circle, and I think that the circle matters, and I broke it down on Leafs Talk yesterday about how I want him to get the circle, and I hope he plays tonight, and I hope he has the attitude of just, yep, I'm going to go and do it. But Sheldon Keefe was asked if Matthews is playing tonight, and here was the answer. Now you can go, Mike.
I'm sorry?
Will Austin play tomorrow?
We'll talk about it. We've got 12 healthy forwards.
I think Kevin was referring to the fact that you guys were down 3 and it was still late, that there was, you pulled the goal to try and...
Oh, I mean...
Anyway, 12 healthy forwards, I think, is indicating that he doesn't want to play him. And Keefe, I thought, again, I'm reading a transcript here. I didn't listen to the entire media conference yesterday, but I thought he was a lot more reserved, like, than he was a little bit the day before. When he was asked the questions the day before, the game before, he was pretty fiery. He was like, yeah, blaming the fans essentially for being too loud when Austin Matthews is touching the puck. And I'm like, ooh, Sheldon. And he tried to retract and he tried to walk it back and blah, 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 blah. But either way, that's a little bit more tempered. But I think it also kind of tells you where the head coach is at, and I kind of understand it. But also, I still hope Austin Matthews plays tonight. Christopher Stieg is the creator, the inventor, the brains behind the Clever app. He's also a two-time Stanley Cup champion. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
Oh, I am good. How are you,
JD? Oh, you don't sound good at all. You sound flustered. No, you sound frustrated. Rainy.
Another rainy day in Ontario, let me tell you.
I know.
Alberta right now, sunshine and blue sky.
Oh, you should go back. Yeah. You should go back there.
That's I've been trying to tell the wife.
Yeah, like,
as you know,
it's time. It's time for you to get out. Don't you see those ads around the city, like move to Alberta ads? Like, it's bigger. You could get a bigger house. You know, you could
way bigger.
That's what I'm saying. You could, buddy. This is the move for you. Finally, we figured out what to do. This is it. You got to go. You got to go. You could make Clever Alberta. Like, that could be fine. You could leave somebody run the ship here, right? The leagues.
We have good people in the background.
That's what I'm saying, man. You know what? I'm happy for you. Congrats on your future move back to Alberta, back to where you belong. What do you think about the playing tonight thing for Austin Matthews? Because, yeah, he is sitting on 69. I'm a little torn about it, but, like, what's the move here? Keefe goes to him and says, what do you want to do, and that's just it?
You have to play him. You have to play him. And, you know, when did we talk about this a couple of weeks ago? How are they going to manage Matthews coming down the stretch? At that time, I think he was 7 goals away. If he was 4 goals away, understandably so, how you talk about these situations, even, you know, when we're talking about him not going on for the empty net or stuff like that. Like, these are massive milestone situations that don't come along often. And you as a coach need to be with your player, be with the team that is focusing all their energy into getting 70. If this team was fighting for a playoff spot and they understood that the energy would be better to go in towards a playoff spot than to getting your teammate a milestone that has barely ever been reached in the history of hockey, then I totally understand it. But just, he has to play. He has to play. They have to put him on in the situations to try to get him to this milestone. This guy has put his heart and soul into this season. Mm. 69 goals, man. Now, as a coach, you got to get on the same frequency. You have to get on the same frequency. It can't be in post games. Oh, well, you know, this is annoying. Shut up. Mm-hmm. Shut up. Like, this is going to be one of those things. In 20 years, Keith's going to be sitting at home. And he's going to look back and he's just going to realize, I should have just done this for him, or I should have just supported this situation more. Because when you're in the eye of the hurricane, sometimes you don't know. These are things and situations that don't come around, and he needs his coach to be on the same frequency and have his, he's always had his back, but just outwardly as well, right? To the public, to the people, whatever you put out, be on the same frequency.
Bro, I'm with you about this. So I think Matthew should play as well. I think he should be going for the milestone. And I shouldn't, I don't think anybody should be overly concerned about it. Like, I get if you're Matthews and you hit 70, right? Or you miss 70 and you play this game and you go in the postseason against the Bruins. And if you lose, you got to know what everybody's going to say, right? Like, oh, wow, you already
Could
played.
Can you imagine the what ifs the rest of your career?
No, that's it. That's it. You got to do it. Like, you got to do it. Yeah. You're supposed to be like the, and you're not supposed to be, you are the alpha goal scorer in the NHL. Like, I don't want you to back away from this challenge. I don't want you to back away from this challenge. I do think it's important the way that Keefe handles this. And I don't really love, I'm not trying to be overly critical here, but yeah, I hated the quote that he had about the fans where he's like, obviously a distraction, it doesn't help us. It's like, what are you doing? They're fans
that
are
you doing?
That's what I'm
saying. We've been begging them to cheer forever.
I know. And now you're saying this. And then yesterday even, I get being non-committal, but even the line about the 12 healthy forwards, you're like, hey man, how about you just say it's going to be in Austin, or like, we want them to play, or not, don't approach him at all with this conversation, trying to insinuate any level of pressure on him. Like, no offense to Sheldon Keefe, and I agree with this. Your job security as the head coach of this team is way less important to everybody than whatever Austin Matthews is feeling. And this is the part that I really want to ask you about is, do you believe, I had a bit of a theory yesterday and I still believe it. Like, so the Colts, right? They could have gone 16-0. And instead, the final game of the season, they sit Peyton Manning and they put in Curtis Painter and they lose this football game. And then they lose in the first round of the playoffs and they go to the guys in the dressing room and Robert Mathis, the defensive end, is like, you guys remember the Super Bowl winner from 3 years ago? And the reporter's like, oh, he's like, yeah, but everybody remembers the 72 Dolphins, right? And it obviously hurt the mojo of their locker room. And I wonder what you think about, like, the energy around the room that is surrounding this chase for 70, or, yeah, whether you think that it's more risky to not play him and take on whatever manifestation of, vibe killing that could potentially take on. Does that momentum go game to game? Do you think that that's a real effect?
Yeah, I think the momentum, especially in a situation like this, when you have a player going after such a significant milestone, has mm-hmm. to play into the room. Every single player on the ice, you have to know where your teammate is. Like I told you 2 weeks ago, you know when a guy's going for 20 goals, let alone 70. And when every single news reporter is in your room talking about it, I could totally understand the situation and the vibe if they were in a playoff hunt right now and things are a distraction and 70 goals. But they've been in the playoffs for how long now? Mm-hmm. They've understood their spot. This is the piece that's selling the game to the average fan right now as well. Like, if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs ownership, I would go to Keith right now and say, keep pumping this up. Stop downplaying this situation. But as a team, everyone, again, needs to be on the same frequency. Your coaching staff has to be excited for it. You shouldn't ever just say, oh, we have 12 healthy fours. No, mm-hmm. Austin's playing. He's in the lineup. And we are going to do everything we can to help him reach this milestone because we have his back. Not now all of a sudden, I don't know how their interactions are between each other as a coach and a player, but
if Austin
Matthews, yeah, but what if he wakes up today and he hasn't had an interaction and all of a sudden it's like, well, am I even playing tonight? And I'm going for 70? So I don't know if he's already come to him and said, hey, I'm just going to tell the media, I don't know, because I'm going to mess with him a little bit or I'm going to downplay the situation and not put more pressure on you. All in all, like just how it's been handled and a couple things, I don't mind the game management at times, like we said a while back, but it does definitely play into the psyche of the room, does definitely play into the players, and going for something like this in essentially a meaningless game should be all the focus put onto Austin to try to get him to where he wants to be and where the league wants him to be.
Yeah. You think that Keefe even has that power, though? Like, he wants to keep Matthews of the lineup? You think he actually even could?
Yeah, he better not.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he does.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, if I'm Judd Moldaver right now, his agent, and they keep him out of the lineup, I'm breaking chairs running into the offices of Toronto Maple Leafs Sports and Entertainment at the moment.
Yeah. Do you think there's any pressure, though, on Matthews? Like, do you think there's a case you made for him going to the room and being like, guys, I appreciate everything that you've done for me. This has been a crazy successful season. I love the fact that we chased 70 and that I got so close and that you guys were all a part of it, but I know what's important, and that's the playoffs. I'm going to sit tonight. Like, how do you think something like that goes?
I just don't think that's a realistic situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even think that's in Austin's mind, unless it's like you're scared to know the what if I attempt and it does not work out.
Dude, I love that you said that. I love that you said the scared part, because I thought the same kind of thing yesterday where I was like, I wasn't trying to call him a coward if he does it, because like, duh, that's way too strong a language. But part of me is like, dude, get in there. Go play. Don't be afraid of this, you know? Like, go chase it.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly it. It's that old cliche whenever you talk to someone. It's better to try and fail than not to try at all. And that's essentially what the situation he is in at this moment. And if he doesn't do it, I mean, 69 goals. If he does it and he gets 70, he's in some pretty supreme air with some of the best players and best goal scorers of all time. And it's just better for him to attempt it, go play, and whatever happens, happens. Everyone will still respect him. He's still one of the most beloved teammates, the best players in the hockey league, but he has to try to attempt this. And I can't even see that ever being in a guy like Austin Matthews' psyche. It'd be just, hey, I'm going to go try, and if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, I tried my best.
Okay, brother. Today is a lot about psyche stuff. Okay, you and I are playing psychologists. We're trying
to. It's a rainy day.
Yeah, it is. It's rainy. You know, we got the grunge playing. We're thinking about things like, you know, it's a lot of 90s rock, a lot of 90s angst stuff. Nylander doesn't have a goal in 10 games. He only has 3 points during those 10 games. He did say this to Jonas Siegel a couple of days ago. He said that he was basically asked if the chase for 100 points while in a year that he signed a contract extension was impacting him. He said, quote, "I think that's probably played a little bit of a part in it for sure," end quote. He also did go on to say, like, he knows that the playoffs matter and all this different stuff, and he has been a playoff performer, but, like, that concern you at all?
No.
Okay.
No, you know, myself knowing myself going for milestones back in the day, now they are pigeon milestones in comparison.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start to think about it, you start to play the game differently. You're not making the best plays. You're not putting yourself in the situation to succeed the way you were previously. So that's how I see the games with Nylander over the last bit too. He's a lot of home run plays, a lot of holding onto the puck, and he's also not fully dedicated right now, I don't think, to the game. He understands they're in the playoffs. Sometimes Willie goes to sleep. And right now, I think maybe probably 10, 15 games ago, he thought he would cruise possibly to 100. And at the moment, he's not. And then once you get closer and closer, you start to squeeze the stick. And like I said, you're starting to make more home run plays. You're not making all the little plays or the little things that used to add up to getting you all those points. And now you're in the situation where you're 3 points away from 100. I hope he does it. But worrying about Willie Nylander going for 100 points comparison to, like, when you get the refresh of going into a playoff run and you're excited and you're willing to do whatever it takes, none of that worries me about Willie and the finish to the season. I've seen so many guys go for milestones or come at the end of the year and they're not playing well. The best part about the playoffs is a refresh. It's a new season. It's a new energy. It's something I miss about hockey is getting to April. You see the trees are coming out. You know, you see the leaves. You're coming to the rink. It's like a breath of fresh energy. And that's what Willie Nylander will have. And that's why I don't worry about this ending. It is obviously a distraction in his own mind for himself to chase the 100 points. And I totally understand that. But him and himself, he's going to be one of the best players coming to the playoff run. And then looking at the matchup too, like, Willie could torch this Boston team if he goes off.
Mm-hmm. So the only thing I can relate that to, because I don't get career milestones like him on Willie. Show 100, like, none of this stuff matters. The only thing I can kind of equate that to was turning 30, where, like, you're 29 and you're like, oh my God, I'm gonna be 30. And it's like, the closer you get, you're like, oh my God, I'm gonna be 30. This is so intense. And my stupid brain, I'm not even lying. This is the most embarrassing thing I've ever admitted on the show. I remember thinking when I was gonna turn 30, I was like, I'll never be on a 30 under 30 list. and I was like, it's over for me. I never made one. And so, but then you turn 30 and you're like, oh, okay, whatever. It's kind of like refreshed. Like, there's no more pressure on your age. You're just kind of like, yeah, it was really no difference. No big deal.
Here's the thing about milestones, though, is if you're 3 points away from 100 and you have 7 games remaining, you start to look ahead of, okay, I can knock it a point in game 7, game 6, okay, game 5. Okay, maybe I can, you know, so you start to go through everything in your brain about the milestone. And all of a sudden, the milestone could possibly start to scare you or, like I said, changes the way you play. But when you're coming, when you're leading up, just like your birthday, you're leading up to the milestone, you are going through every situation of the what-ifs, what-nots. And sometimes that's what holds guys back. And some guys, the most, you know, mentally strong, the guys that hit them always power right through it.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, though, is, like, once it happens, though,
It's like you're
okay, cool, whatever. I'm normal. So, like, I'm not concerned about the idea as much of, like, the way that you're speaking about these milestones. I'm not as concerned if Matthews doesn't hit 70 or if Nylander doesn't hit 100. Like, that's going to have some type of carryover effect into the postseason where they're like, damn it, I didn't get the thing. It's like, no. Okay, that's done now. It's the new thing. And, you know, you're not even going to think twice about it.
It's just for legacy and history of the game.
Yeah. In the moment, though, you're thinking about this. The second it's over, like I said, it's like turning 30 where you're like, okay, cool, new thing, like whatever. All that stuff was actually really dumb.
Yeah. Well, you climb one mountain and you want to go climb another.
Yeah.
So that's what these guys do. This is this has no effect on going into the playoffs, how they'll play, but it is something that people will talk about for the next 500 years in hockey, these mm-hmm. milestones that guys hit in these eras, in these times.
Mm-hmm. God, I do hope they get it though tonight. So yeah, they're playing Tampa. There is still this game. They are hunting the milestones. I am still invested in, I am interested in it. And sounds by, you know, all things that we're trying to drive at here is like Matthew's going to play, Nylander's probably going to play. But sticking with psychology, I don't think I've ever asked you this, and it's different when you were on the team that, like, you know, you've said it before that you think Kane is the most clutch player of all time, although a team wasn't clutch enough to make the playoffs again. It's like Red Wings 8 years in a row, no playoffs. Yikes. Not the Red Wings I grew up with, but anyway, so you've got a guy that you guys had like supreme confidence in terms of coming up in the clutch and you guys did these things, but was there a team in particular where like, we got these guys in a mental vice, like there's just no way that this team is beating us and we just feel even extra confident against this team?
Yeah. Vancouver Canucks. Yeah. That was the team. And, they were the better team for sure. In 2009, we went in there as a younger team. We upset them, beat them, and then came back again in 2010. Everyone thought that, you know, that series had a 50-50 chance of going either way. I think in our minds, we're like, how's people even picking the Vancouver Canucks? Mm-hmm. I remember Matt Molson was on a show. This is how much I remember it. He went on NHL Network, and he picked Vancouver Canucks, and I hated Matt Molson for that. Hated. And I played against him for another, like, yeah, 7 years, 8 years in the NHL. I'm like, how can this guy, yeah, pick the Vancouver Canucks over us? Like, we own these guys. Tell Kevin I said that too, by the way. Yeah. And what frustrates me a little bit about that is in 2011, we lost half our team and then they played against a shell of ourselves in 2011 and whatever.
Yeah.
But that was the team when we showed up into a playoff run, we felt that we had them, like you said, in a mental vice. The team that did that to us on the flip side was your old Detroit Red Wings. When we were younger, playing against them in the regular season, we couldn't beat them in the regular season. I was like, "What? Why can't we beat these guys?" And then we get into the playoffs, and they beat us in 5 games. They teach us a lesson. And then the following year, in 2010, San Jose beat them. And I remember our whole team was like, thank God San Jose beat them. Because that was the one team, deep down, I don't think we wanted to play. Just knowing about their pedigree, how they play in the playoffs, those guys that have been on so many cup runs. And Detroit had Chicago in a bit of a mental pretzel for all those years leading up. They had all the cups. And then obviously when we go play San Jose instead of Detroit, mm-hmm, it's a different mindset going into that playoffs or into that playoff series.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's my point of curiosity with this. I'd love to get the truth serum from the Leafs. Like, hey, how did you feel when you guys got into the dressing room last night, game was over, and you knew you were playing the Boston Bruins instead of the Florida Panthers? Like, was your reaction, hey, you know, the Panthers beat us last year and they're actually the younger, better, more balanced, deeper team? Or was it, oh my God, no, these guys, they own us. And like, you know, again, no one would say it outwardly, but deep down, like privately, I do wonder if that's the feeling.
There could be some piece to it where they are mentally like, oh my gosh, I'd rather face the Bruins than the Panthers. But if I'm looking at lineups, that is the best case scenario, mm-hmm, for you to play the Boston Bruins. The Boston Bruins, like, look at Danton Heinen on their first line, or, you know, Morgan Geekie, Trent Frederick, all good players. But if you go throughout both lineups, Boston is a very well coached team. They got guys bought into their system. But if you start to get into a playoff matchup, and you look at possible line matching and combinations and all that, this is, I think, the best case scenario for a Toronto Maple Leafs team that has more firepower, they're deeper, and I think overall the back ends are, you know, you could say Boston's is better. I think they're bought into the system a bit better, and they play as a collective unit, and they defend overall, mm-hmm, better. But I like the matchup in its entirety better than playing against the Florida Panthers. So looking at that side, oh, which jersey I'm playing, I'm sure there's a lot of guys I'd rather play this or that team. But then if you go into the details of the matchup, the Leafs are the better team on paper.
Totally agree. Man, these are the centers. This is the center depth for the Boston Bruins. Pavel Zacha, Charlie Coyle, Morgan Geekie, Jesper Boqvist.
Yeah, I looked at it today. I didn't even know some of the players on their team.
Yeah, it's I don't know who Jakub Lauko is or Jason Megna, who is makes up the fourth line. I don't know those dudes. I'm not familiar with it. Now that I've said this, they're going to play this in Boston's dressing room, and it's going to be like on the on the Bruins Stanley Cup DVD. Remember when they had those? It's like, here's the quote of this idiot saying this stupid thing. And you're like, oof, that's tough.
Seager's drafted to the Bruins. We hate him. We traded him for a bag of pop.
Yeah, exactly. Look at these two morons. You're now... You're going to be Matt Molson to the Bruins guys. They're like, really? Is he going to say it's the best case scenario?
I think they're the best coach team in the NHL.
Yeah. No,
dude, Jim Montgomery is an incredible coach. Everywhere he goes, he figures out what to do with his lineup.
Yeah, gas him up. Yeah.
That's the difference is one team has the better players, and I think if they win the series, they win on skill.
Yeah.
The other team has the better coaching, and if they win the series, they win on coaching. That's how I feel that series will go, because if you go and do a game five or game six, and you can pretty much flip Nylander on a third line, like we've said, and they've done it a little bit in the past, and you can start to create more line matching that gives these Boston teams with like certain players on third and fourth lines hard matchups. I can't see why the Leafs can't beat the Boston Bruins. I just think it's a way better matchup than playing the Florida Panthers. It's not even close.
I think there's two, like, or sorry, I should say three things. I do think that Boston has the coaching advantage. Like, I don't think that there's any Leaf fans that can say that they have a huge amount of faith in Sheldon Keefe, especially since it's been multiple postseasons where you felt like, damn, he got outcoached. Like, that hasn't been, that's been a running theme of these exits under Sheldon Keefe. Two is that psychological edge. Like, I think that David Pastrnak looks at the Leafs and he just goes, breakfast, you know, the yum yum. I torture this team. I score every single time. I'm not thinking. I play free and easy. I don't even think he's older than, I think maybe he's slightly older than Nylander. Like, you, but either way, he's just like, I'm his big brother, essentially. I'm the big brother to the Leafs. So I'm going to go out there and rip it out. And then Marchand knows that he's in their head. So, like, those two guys, I think particularly, are like, oh, yeah, they're the mental vice guys when it comes to this team. And then lastly, it's just goaltending is, you know, Toronto's goaltending has made me pretty nervous recently. And I feel like, yeah, Boston is going to be pretty fine in that area. But everything else, like, I would say, yeah, tilts towards Toronto, or is at least, you know, like the blue line a draw.
Yeah, the blue line and, like you said, the goaltending, that stuff can flip on its side super fast, just like you saw against the Florida Panthers. Momentum, and if a team's in, and or if David Pastrnak gets smashed in the first shift by Bertuzzi and he's not feeling his game is on, or just something. Like, that's why playoffs are the best, is you can think something's going to go one way, and all of a sudden, Samsonov's hot or Wolf's hot, and then the two Boston goalies, Swayman and Allmark, you know, they can't stop anything, similar to the way it was against Florida in the last series. So goaltending is funny in the playoffs. Some goalies can handle the pressure, some can't. I remember, you know, talking about Luongo. Luongo at times was great against us. Everyone's like, oh, he's a massive goalie advantage. And then sometimes he was letting in bad goals, or, you know, we were putting up seven on him. So it really depends on... again, back to matchups, time after goals, puck management, game management, how bought in the teams are to it at that moment, and if they're going to raise their level. And that's why, you know, I hope the Leafs can do it, but I see a guy like Austin Matthews, if he gets hot in that first round, he's potting four or five against those goalies. Now all of a sudden their confidence tanks. Maybe it makes his goalies feel better. So those things can all turn on a dime. They really can. But you're talking about Brad and Pastrnak. Those two guys are, you know, they are playoff hockey. Those guys understand what it takes. They drive the bus. And if you're looking at two guys to drive the bus against the Leafs and drive them nuts, it's those two. But they're against the Leafs. You got Max Domi now. You got Tyler Bertuzzi. You brought these guys in to try to combat that type of play and that type of atmosphere. And you hope they can do it, because I think they can. I love them playing the Bruins way more than playing the Panthers.
Yeah, that's where I think I settled with it too. It just feels weird to say, because honestly, you're so tortured, as anybody that's followed the Leafs, as you're like trying to be confident or, you know, even semi-pleased with anything. You're like, you want to, you know, punish yourself. You're like, no, hit yourself with a stick for thinking that something could be okay, because this is bad, this is bad, this is a bad mentality to have. Yeah, and speaking of those series for you guys, I had Corey Schneider on last week. Great guy, really cerebral dude.
Awesome guy.
Yeah, really awesome guy. But yeah, I was looking back through his first playoff start, and yeah, it was because you guys chased Luongo, I think 6-1 in game four. But yeah, so yeah, you humanized him a little bit. Last thing before you go, this Hart Trophy is insane. Like, you're going to have Kucherov with 100 assists tonight, or potentially anyways. You're going to have Matthews potentially with 70 goals. You got McDavid sitting on 100 assists. Like, these are things that, again, only have been done by or Gretzky and Lemieux. You've got an incredible season from Nathan MacKinnon. Like, do you care? Like, do you track it? Like, do you have a guy that you think it should be?
Well, if you hear Biz or you hear all these guys talk, it was MacKinnon. If you hear other guys talk, it's Kucherov. You know, obviously there's homers to each side. At the start, when I was looking at the whole McDavid thing, I think when you were talking to me 2 weeks ago, I said if McDavid gets 100 assists, four people have done it in history, but now Kucherov does, is that five? Does that technically devalue that?
I think so.
Two people have done it now in 1 year, where it's been done by three in the history. So I don't know. I still like Nathan MacKinnon, looking at the entirety overall of what he's done. He's a plus 34. You can also look at Matthews. He's a plus 32. If you look at Nikita Kucherov, plus 10. So if you're looking at the five-on-five play, where they're at with goals, I don't know. Like, at the time, I was with Connor McDavid. Now I think I'm looking at Nathan MacKinnon as the guy that has elevated his game above McDavid at times this season. Now, I still think McDavid's the best player on the planet, but watching when MacKinnon is on, he is a madman possessed. It is like game time. I am taking it over. So I just think he's the guy who optically to me looks the closest hockey player on the planet to Connor McDavid. And he's backed it up 5-on-5. He's backed it up with over 50 goals, you know, 130. What is he? He might get 140 points, right? Or are they done now?
I think he's done, but I don't know for sure. I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, I don't know. If you told me right this second to vote, it would be MacKinnon, but you could give it to Kucherov. I could make a case for Kucherov. You could make it for McDavid. Hey, back to Lightning, that team scares me more.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's actually a real positive for the Leafs, is that the Bolts and the Panthers have to play each other. And like, if you're really trying to dream this thing out, I think that the ultimate scenario for the Leafs is that Tampa knocks out the Panthers, and that
they have them in a mental pretzel. Always, they're the big brother.
Though. Yeah, that's what I mean. But I still think, like, Toronto having now beat Tampa and the way they match up against them, like that Tampa team, you know, you beat them a year ago and Vasilevsky's scary and they're all playing scary, but they go through a first round series war with, you know, Florida, and that goes 6-7 games. Toronto's beat Tampa before. You know, they've had a pretty good track record against Vasilevsky. They made him look very human last year in the playoffs. I don't know. I don't hate that one. So, yeah, that would be my dream, but I'm not trying to get too far ahead of myself and plan this thing out because, you know, best laid plans. But either way, I think that this broke out correct. It's just, you know, the psychological stuff is obviously very, very big. And, yeah, I'm fine with MacKinnon. I think it's super tight. I have it Matthews 1, MacKinnon 2, and then McDavid 3, and then Kucherov, like, you know, a pretty distant 4th, just because he's got over half his points on the power play. Like, his numbers 5-on-5 aren't even close to any of these guys, and like the primary point stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I have him probably 3 or 4.
Yeah, it's funny to me because, again, like, you know, you look at all this stuff and McDavid still has the highest primary points percentage, and like, it's like, okay, he's only got 30 goals, but how many of those goals were basically using like Zach Hyman as a bumper, like a pool player, where he's like, yeah, and then off him and then in the net. It's like he's almost doing it harder, where he's like elevating the challenge. Yeah, so to
he
me,
was 120th in league scoring in November.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean, is if he doesn't get off to a slow start, it's like we're
it's
doing
not
this.
Even a question.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's just so funny because I do think that as good as MacKinnon is, and man, I really respect MacKinnon's game, and I think he does everything the right way. I'm glad that he is going to get a Hart Trophy in some way, because it would be weird for him to finish his career without one. But yeah, I think that the best statistical case to me is actually Matthews. The best like feel good case and fine deserving, but also like aesthetic choice is MacKinnon. But every year I'm like, poor McDavid, is anybody will try to find any excuse to be like, it's not your year. He's just 100 assists. They're like, no, you're third. It's like, okay, sure. Wow, yeah, see you next year.
I mean, 2 weeks ago I picked him.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So. He's right there. Anyways.
I mean, he's right there. But you think about how valuable he is to the team, which technically is that's what it means. That team was how far out of it in November?
Yeah.
And he was in 120th. And to from where his team has come today, you can clearly make a case he is the most valuable player to a team in the league by a mile.
Well, that's what I mean. If you do that every year, like, who's the most valuable? It's like, well, then just hand him the award before the season starts, you know? Yeah. Like, you can't have it that way because, it's very clear. I think he was even dinged up at the beginning of the season. There was questions of his health. But, like, yeah, imagine they were in that hole and McDavid had to miss a month. It's just, you know, you might as well be getting ready for the draft. So, pretty clear. Anyways, buddy, we'll be talking to you a bunch during the playoffs. Thanks for making time today.
You take care.
Yeah, Christopher Stieg of the Clever app, which, again, you can go to the App Store and download for free. Also, partnering with a group called Quench. And 2-time Stanley Cup champion. And the stuff about the mental vice stuff is, like, the things that spook me is that the Boston Bruins, like, got a guy who's got theories, you know, a friend of mine who's got theories. He's out here theorizing, and he's behind the glass right now. Sam McKee's going to jump in here for a couple minutes next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, my boy is here, Sam McKee. Because you're hosting Real Kipper and Board today. You're in the daddy chair.
Hate it. Yeah, I'm on the big desk. I might actually just sit in the regular spot and make Borny sit by himself.
Every one shot is just Born sitting by himself.
Yeah. No, I'm here.
So Kip would have taken today off if Matthews popped 70?
Yeah, prior engagement. Well, the thing is, our show is at a weird time. So he booked something, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's like he was booked in for something at 10:30. So we're off because the stupid Blue Jays.
Yeah.
And we're off again.
Hey, Blue Jays. I'm talking about them in a second. Three series wins in a row.
Oh, yeah,
brother.
They're hot. They're hot. Yeah, they can't score any runs, but they're hot. Listen, I am buddy, the number one Blue runs. Jays provocateur, okay? I can't get off that they suck bandwagon yet.
Pitching and defense.
Hey, guess what? I'd like to formally announce something. I'm all the way back on the Jays.
Okay, yeah. I haven't watched the two games against the Yanks, I can't talk about it.
I have been on the Jays since I walked the concourse on home opener and I went, I love this so much.
Yeah,
there's nothing I love more. I'm going to the Jays game today. I adore being there.
Yeah, of course. I didn't love it on Friday.
No, you and I were at the worst
that
game.
That was a stinky poo-poo game.
That might be the worst game of the year. John Schneider did his signature move, though, of like, hey, we're down a couple runs. Bring in the...
Espino!
Dude, it was so funny. Yesterday, Trent Richards pitched, and the broadcast going, Trent Richards...
Trevor Richards.
I don't know why I do that.
I'm the Jays guy.
Okay. Yeah, no, you are the Jays guy. I'll never be able to get that out of my head, Trent. But so, yeah.
Who is Trent Richards?
Running back.
Oh, right.
Richardson. Yeah. But yeah, the bust.
Mm.
Yeah.
Kept missing holes right in front of him.
Yeah, Wasn't he the guy with like the something about a jacket with him? About the Hall of Fame jacket? Like somebody made the take that they're going to sign him up for a famous one or some kind.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, it was like, this guy's this bona fide Hall of Famer. Yeah. You can fit him for a jacket.
I don't know who it was that said it.
Yeah, but, and then he's got one of the funniest compilations in NFL history, which is like
it is really
open
bad.
Holes.
I've seen it.
And he can't
just
hit
like
it.
Running into the line.
Oh, yeah. He might be blind. He genuinely might be a blind guy playing football. But anyway, Trevor Richards gets in and Buck's like, he hasn't pitched in a week. And I went, yeah, that's because Schneider loves. It's like, where was he before?
No leverage guy has pitched in a week.
John was like, we're down a run. And so we don't want to put anybody in the baseball game who can play baseball well.
Yeah.
So he's just like, that's why Wes Parsons loves he loves the Espositos. It's like, he loves those dudes that the human white flags.
Quickly, before we get to Leafs, I did watch a bit of the game on Monday while I was waiting for Ali at the cell phone parking lot of the airport. And I caught the inning that Buck was talking about Jackie Robinson because it was Jackie Robinson Day.
Unbelievable.
Dude, it was like a 3.5-minute history lesson. Yeah. He was going through the guys that they could have taken instead of Jackie Robinson. Yeah. I'm like, what? How do you know this, Buck? There's no other broadcaster in the league that has that in the bag.
Dude.
I'm like, that was an elite history lesson on the fly.
I say this all the time, and I hate almost saying it because it just sounds like all I'm doing is shilling.
No.
World the fact that we have night, this broadcast team.
It's amazing.
Oh, Dan Buck is it's all time.
Dan Buck, you go to studio and it's just like Siddle is there. It's incredible that
get
that.
It's great.
It's incredible.
Sportsnet is great.
Hey.
And I was watching it on Sportsnet Plus on my phone.
You know what I've been noticing?
Yes.
Sportsnet?
Great.
Rules.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
It rocks.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, I got more Jay's thoughts later because I will say that, man, I am becoming a guy who's back on the positivity train, but okay. I I sports not hate the
yet.
Manager.
I'm not there yet.
I can't stand him. Yeah. I can't stand him. Same. I'm like, I don't know what's going on in your brain ever, but it just never, I don't agree with it ever. Like, I don't agree with it ever.
I don't think he's pulling all the strings either.
And I went, sure, but even the other day, he's like, Chris Bassett, the pitch comm doesn't work, and he's in the post game, and he's like, he had a bit of a wardrobe malfunction. He's like, I can't believe I said wardrobe malfunction. And I was like, you're corny. I was mad.
And all
like,
the people,
like,
so all the people
know, like, I'm just mad at that. It's like that. That's when I know I'm like, oh, you're a loser. You turned into that guy.
And all the people are like, oh.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They're like, oh, John.
Like he's prime George Carlin.
Johnny. Yeah. No, this is infuriating. I can't. Yeah, I just, I'm not into it. That's not into it. Okay, so yeah, I wanted to chat with you today because yeah, you were off Leafs talk last night. You, Borny, and I though, every single playoff game is here. You and I tonight. This is legitimately the nightmare scenario outline.
It's happened.
Okay, yeah,
it has become.
You manifested it. You manifest.
Sure.
Do you? Okay, two part question. How much do you blame yourself for this?
Much.
Okay.
I was. You know me, massive. You know, sports juju guy, huge, and it's like, this feels like it's happened.
This is how we became friends.
Yes.
Like, sitting in the bullpen, trying to do whatever we could with the vibes to make our teams win.
Correct.
As interns. Part two is, where are you at mentally with, like, Matthews playing? Like, let's just put it this way. If he was your, like, best friend, and you cared about the team equally as much as you do right now.
Yeah.
And he comes to you and he's like, hey, man, what do you think I should do?
I think you should play.
Oh, so you're there. Like, welcome to the team.
Well, listen.
Hey.
Listen.
Nice to have you here.
I'm assuming Sheldon Keefe isn't his best friend. And I'm assuming Brad Treliving isn't his best friend. So I think it's a different conversation with those two guys. But I think if you're ever going to have a no-hitter, tonight's the night where there is literally nothing to play for. I would assume they're starting their Civ backup. Is Jonason still their backup? Or who the hell is even their backup now to Vasilevskiy? I'm assuming.
He hates not playing, though, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, he might play. Who knows? But, like, even for him hating to not play, tonight would be a stretch for him to play. So if he's not playing, they don't have any healthy forwards. They're banged up. He's going to have to play.
God.
He's playing. And I'm, you know, where's the wood to touch in here? I'm less worried about tonight than I was about last night. Thought last night where they had something to play for, the Panthers. It's a greasy matchup. They hate each other. Like, it's just, they have more dirt balls in their team. I was more worried about that one. I think he's going to play tonight out of necessity. I think the ideal scenario is he gets it in the first period.
Yeah, of course.
You play him 12, 13 minutes, and away we go. We'll start the playoffs on Saturday. But, yeah, we're here.
Yeah. The first period thing would be incredible.
Yeah.
Not just for his safety, but just to, I think, for him to get it.
I know.
Like,
I can't believe it didn't drop into the net in the third period when he went back towards the forehand.
I know.
And it just floats on the goal line.
By the way, Tkachuk didn't know that wasn't going in, but he did know to knock that net off.
Of course.
What a dirtbag. I got to tell you, though, I love it. I would love to have a guy that's like that who's like, no, I'd rather do this than you get it. Because the puck's sitting there, and he obviously bangs the net off. And then you know he's guilty because the first thing he does is, like, start screaming at the officials, like, I didn't do anything. You're like, nobody said you did.
You know, you should immediately have gotten a penalty for how guilty you acted.
Yeah.
The ref's like, well, you obviously did it.
You did it. Yeah, he's screaming over there. But I went, that's how you know those two guys are really close friends. Like, Matthews has said multiple times that Tkachuk will send him just, like, his highlights and texts, which
love
I think is so funny.
Love that move.
But you don't want your buddy to get the 70 against your team and have you be on the ice, especially where the video is Tkachuk chewing on his mouth guard,
sour
looking at Matthews getting 70. I really wanted to get it because this is the part that I can't help but feel, but it's true, is like, this is an incredible accomplishment. He has scored the most even strength goals since anyone in 30 years.
Solani.
He has kicked the teeth in of Ovechkin's best goal scoring season. I don't care about air adjusted. If you come with me at or come at me with that, like, you're the biggest dork.
Era adjusted.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's the dorkiest
thing.
God, we're old.
People are era adjusting our era?
Oh, buddy, what do you mean?
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to know how old we are? What I thought of yesterday? Buddy, we're Connor Bedard. I was thinking, like, we're in the era of guys now entering the league who are all going to be, you know, Matthews mimics.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how old we are.
All the young guys shoot like Matthews.
That's
now.
What I mean. It's that's
Crazy.
Horrific.
Yeah, it's really bad. It's really bad.
You want one? You want the worst one?
Yes.
That Mike Jose hit me with today?
Yes. Love Mike Jose, by
the way. Yeah, it's beauty. Cool tattoos, too. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. He was asking me if I'd eat Tim Hortons pizza when we were in there. I was like, I would.
Yeah, of course you would. You know what, though? It's funny. So Mike Jose has a disease. Yeah. He can't eat anything.
Okay.
No, it's not a disease. He's allergic. What I like saying is he's got some form of weird allergy where he can't eat any normal food, which is crazy. He's just sad. He mopes around. He looks like he's emo all the time. Okay. I'm like, what's up, buddy? He's like, I'm eating quinoa. And you're like, oof, that is dark.
I actually love sad. Quinoa, but that's
no,
tough.
No, that's all he can all eat. You can it's all he can eat. Tough, you, yeah. It's all he can eat. So he's in here every day. He's like, oh, so sad. But he's got cool tattoos because he's got to feel something, yeah. You know, because he can't.
Yeah, gotcha.
He's like, got two cool tattoos. But he told me today that it's been a decade since the We the North era began.
Okay, that's okay.
That's okay?
Yeah.
Oh,
feels like
that
I'm
hit
okay.
me and I was like, 10 years?
Yeah, I think that makes me feel super old.
No, that makes me feel like a dinosaur, yeah. Brother. I remember those ads and going like, oh, 100%. I'm so jacked.
Yeah.
And I was young. No, I was a young puppy.
That one doesn't hit me that hard. It feels like it's a decade.
That one hit me like a sledgehammer when I read the email. I'm going to talk about it a little later, but it's like he put that in the email, and he's doing something weird with his emails because all the lettering comes in strange.
I didn't even get the email.
Is this guy Carmelo?
Dude, yeah, that's it. It looks like he's
Cam Newton.
Dude, he sends me like abduction emails where it's like all the letters are different.
Got it from
kidnapping
a magazine?
Emails? It's crazy. It's lunatic stuff. I'm like, bro, is this really by the way? Like, you're a professional workspace now. You got to figure this out. Whatever you're copy and pasting from, but yeah, that one got me. Anyways,
time to recalibrate, boys. We all thought it was Florida.
No,
we all thought it was Florida, and then it's like recalibration time.
That's the craziest thing about this. Let's take a quick break. I'm gonna keep you for 5 more minutes, and then we'll do that, and we'll keep you for 5, and then I gotta get some Jay stuff off my chest because I'm gonna yell at the manager, and I'm just gonna be mad about some Jay stuff, and also happy about some Jay stuff because. God, I got to say this going to the break. This is the pause for it. This is the tease. I adore Yusei Kikuchi. Adore him. Quick break. Next. Okay, so Sammy stuck around, and then I'm going to get into some Jays thoughts that I have. Simon went down as a Yankees fan yesterday, like a total scumbag.
Correct.
Yeah.
What?
Wore a Yankee.
Why?
Because I know he's.
Are you a Yankee fan?
Look, we can get into this. We don't. We'll get
this
into
this. This is how all Yankees fans go. They're like, I grew up and they were good and I was a bandwagon. It's like, yeah, we get it. You're a scumbag. What do you want to say? Go ahead.
The story is my grandpa was a huge Yankees fan. Yeah. He got me into it when I was a kid.
He should have been a Jays fan too.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway,
he was a huge Yankees fan?
Yeah, he was.
Where was he from?
Well, we cottage upstate New York. Uh-huh. So we were there all summer watching with the rabbit ears. Yeah. See? I'm getting you guys.
Nah.
I always loved that one.
I grew up a Mariners fan, and so I still...
But you threw them in the ditch.
And immediately.
Yes.
I live here.
Yeah.
What was I going to do? Be like waiting up till 10:30?
You had some moments though, where you would still cheer for the
Mariners.
Here's
the thing. At the very beginning, the Jays were trash, and the Mariners were trying so hard to still make the playoffs. Yeah. And I told you, I went to the Felix Hernandez game where he gave up the bomb in the ninth inning.
To Dalton Pompey?
Yeah, that ended there. I was so sad in that game. Mm. I would go to a lot of Mariners games, and I would see, like, certain guys. I still care, like, a little touch about the Mariners. Like, I want them to do well. But basically, this is my Mariners ritual. Is I tune in for their first game of the season. I'm like, oh, you guys still suck? Cool. Yeah. And I'm out.
They did like a big Jays thing this offseason.
Dude, they players. Yeah, they suck. They suck. They're dog's breakfast.
They trade that third baseman who I loved.
No, yeah, Suarez.
Yeah,
they put great dude. He was there. Player. He's on. The thing is, Arizona is now the collection of all the like good guys that Dumbo teams gave up the two.
Please, let's
the
talk.
Jays and the Mariners are honestly the Spider-Man meme where it's just like they're the two. They're like we're rivals with each other. It's like you guys are both losers. You're not winning anything ever.
Can we please?
Anyways, I'm just saying that when you move to a city that has a baseball team, it's like, and I always did grow up liking the Jays. Like, I loved Roy Halladay, but I wasn't a young baby Jays fan. I was a young baby Mariners fan. But then you get older, it's like, that's what's on TV. You're from this country. They're the only team that was here. It's like,
he's wearing a Florida Marlins hat.
Yeah, it's like, get on board. And that's what I did. So, unlike you, who's like going to games in a Yankees uniform.
You have a jersey?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
Mariano Rivera jersey.
Yeah. Does it say Rivera on it?
No, of course not. Yeah, no, come on.
He's not. You think he would work on my show?
Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, that actually should be one of my questions when I interview guys. Like, so which, if you could get one Yankee, you have to get a Yankees jersey, whose name would be on the back?
Great. Trap them?
Yeah, trap them.
None.
And then they go, none. You're like, correct. Welcome to the show.
If you had to wear a Yankees jersey, who would it be?
That, Rivera.
Rivera?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
I'm not prepared to answer my own question. I'd probably go Judge, 99.
No,
sick.
That's disgusting.
It's a sick number.
No, I'm starting
Judge
a new thing.
Judge is a cool guy.
See, this is it, though. I talked about it with Ennis yesterday. I was like, we need to hate Judge more. Guy comes here, he hits home runs every single series.
He's a stud.
7-7.
He was getting booed last night. And so I'm assuming.
He wasn't one anything.
I hate him.
No?
I always thought that
I hate
he was
Judge.
Like a pretty unobjectionable guy.
Nah, I hate his guts.
But he was getting booed last night. And I was like, okay. But Jays fans coming around.
Where's 99 too? Who do you think you are?
Like, I mean, the whole era before us of Yankees won everything. This, I mean, he hasn't won anything.
Yeah.
And so it's like, he's kind of harmless
to me.
They choke in the ALCS every single year.
Just
anyway,
lose to the Astros every year in the playoffs over and over again.
The Astros are the true villains, and they stole the Yankees villainry.
100%.
And they cheated.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so before you go.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Are you happy it's the Bruins?
No.
Okay, sorry. That's a bad way of putting it because anybody's like, I'm not trying to get you to jinx the team here.
Yeah,
like my brother, who all-time jinx. He's texted me yesterday. He's like, Zion is going off. This is incredible. He's like, I'm so happy watching Zion. 40
nice.
Points. 2 seconds later, left the game.
Nice.
I was like, way to go, Dine. You did this. So I'm not trying to get you to do that.
Okay.
Put that energy out there. But is this your preferred matchup?
No. But
wow, okay. So you'd rather the Florida Panthers?
I'd rather neither.
Oh, you'd rather they not be in the playoffs?
I'd rather they played
just
Pittsburgh.
A bye.
Finish can nine
they,
again.
Can they play Pittsburgh or Washington somehow? No,
okay.
I think
they go back in the draft.
Listen, I watched that second period last night.
Yeah.
I'm like, thank God they're not playing these guys.
Yeah, I know.
I really don't think, you know, to quote Daryl Sutter, it's a waste of 8 days playing those guys. I really don't feel like it would have gone well at all.
Yeah.
I
just think they can do everything so well.
They're like, remember when they were bad there for 2 weeks? And we're all like, oh, maybe they're including myself.
Yeah.
Maybe they're reeling.
Oh, they're reeling a bit. It's like they turned up the playoff intensity in one period and got 30 shots against the Leafs. It's like, oh boy. So I think the Bruins are a easier matchup as far as team goes.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like the ultimate Leaf fan thing where it's like you get the quote unquote easier team, but the easier team is the team that like you have the worst history against and like you hate their building, you hate their fans, you hate watching games there, you hate everything about them. It's like, oh, it's the easier matchup.
Yeah, no,
it's the Boston Bruins.
No.
Sick.
Yes, nightmare.
But, like, I think it'll be a good series.
Yeah.
At least probably lose in 7 in TD Garden.
Yeah.
Right?
As their fans chant, don't 60.
Oh. Hey, we want Florida. They sounded so stupid. You are Florida. Why are you chanting that?
Huh?
You're like, we want Florida. It's like, you are Florida. Shut up. It sounds stupid when you say it like that. I hated that.
Why? But that was they were mocking Leaf
fans. I know what they were doing, but they sounded like idiots. They're like, that's your team, you dumbos. Why do you chant that you want your own team?
Idiots. It's because you're mocking them. It's like, why do you repeat? Dude, buddy, this is an all-time take from a guy whose literal number one move when he mocks people is to repeat what they say and go,
I don't even repeat what they say.
You just do the last.
Let's go, ooh.
Yeah, that's
just skip the first part.
Multiple times. Like, there's no one that hates it more than my beloved wife.
Yeah, I know.
I just hit her between the eyes with it, and she's sour immediately.
It's a it's an all-time hitter.
Yeah, it is.
You're kind of the Mario and Rivera of chirps with that.
I am.
You play Enter Sandman and you just do that.
I think the Leafs could beat the Bruins for sure. But I probably don't think it's going to happen.
Here's all I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. All I'm trying to do mentally is I open up, I look at their depth chart, and I go, Zacha, Coyle, Geeky, Boqvist. Yeah, Zacha, Coyle, Geeky, Boqvist. Like, you got it.
Yeah, but those guys will probably have 4 goals each, and they'll probably like to lose.
Yeah, probably. But I'm just trying to stare at it being like, those guys.
Do you have the decor in front of
me? Yeah.
Yeah, read that part to me.
It's not, honestly, it's really not. Are you afraid of
McAvoy and Lindholm still play for them?
Yeah. They got
the two best defensemen in the series.
Playoff Morgan Rielly is better than Hampus Lindholm.
No chance.
Playoff Mo is about to return.
Well, I hope he turns it up because maybe he had his worst game as a Leaf last night.
I know, -4 last night.
He was awful.
No, that's the thing, man. He's a stakes guy.
I hope he flips the switch
we did this last year, and then how many apology letters did you have to write?
I'm ready to write, baby.
Yeah, so,
I got my quill out.
Okay,
I'm ready to go.
Dip your quill. Dip your quill.
ready to write.
Dip your quill and break out the parchment.
No, the take is now it's like, I hope he does flip it because it hasn't been pretty here for a little while. Edmondson didn't look good last night.
No.
Labushkin looks like scary bad. The decor is a huge concern.
Who are you starting in game one, Labushkin or Brody? I think it comes down to those two. I think everybody else is a lock.
That's a real tough one. I think probably
probably Brody.
You playing him?
Yeah, there's too much history, man. I'm playing him.
I'm a Bush guy.
I bet you 100% I bet you too.
But I think that is the case. I was asking you, like, if you're the coach or you're on the staff.
I still think the upside, which there isn't much of with Brody, is higher than what Labushkin can give you. If Brody dials back the clock and gives you, like, a good game for 17 minutes, that's way better than what Labushkin's going to give you.
What game do you think Matt Murray gets in?
4.
Yeah.
When they're down 3-0. Okay. I'm out here.
All right. See you, buddy. All right. Sammy's on Real Kipper and Born later. Actually, right after?
11.
Yeah. So right after us today. Okay. Good stuff. Everybody's feeling great. The vibes are extremely high.
What a positive show. Thanks, Sam.
He's feeling good. This guy's not anxious at all. You know, it's quite a feat for somebody to make me feel like a real optimist.
Yeah, optimist fan. JD. I like it.
Yeah.
We're always looking at the bright side.
Yeah, Mr. Sunshine.
Positivity like, over here.
Yeah, hell yeah. Sunshine, sunshine. Okay, a couple of Blue Jays things from yesterday, because I want to talk about a couple things specifically. One, I'll start with the positive. I will start with the positives, which is that, like, man, it's 3 series wins in a row for the Jays. And yes, was one of those series Colorado? Sure. But did they get off on the worst foot possible with Colorado? It's like, yeah, but guess what? You bounced back and you recovered. Has the offense been pretty over this stretch? No. But Vladdy came up with clutch hit yesterday. Kirk looks like he's normalizing a little bit. Varsho is at least, you know, contributing offensively. And damn, man, listen, Gurriel did it again last night. And I'm never going to relitigate this trade. And anybody who thinks that it was even close to a good trade is an absolute moron or showing you their bias. But Varsho defensively, dude, he saved that game last night again. And that's 2 games in a row, I think, where he has just made spectacular plays in left field. Like, I downplay or minimize the whole left field defense at time. Oh, defensive run save of a left fielder, and he's way better at center, and they should have put him there. And I do think that the Kiermaier signing was a mistake, that they should have just let Varsho play center field. But boy, oh boy, that play yesterday, I don't know what the percentages are of a play like that when they do the defensive run save stuff. But I got to think that that's like a very, very rare, I'm going to guess like 10 to 15% of guys make that play, because that was outrageous.
Catch probability was 25%.
Yeah, see, I don't even buy those stats. This is what I mean. It's like nobody gets that. That's a Varsho get. Like Varsho gets that ball and maybe Kwan. Like there's very few guys that I think can make that play. But yeah, 3 series wins in a row for the Jays. Vladdy, some good hits, some good approach. I like that the Jays are taking more pitches. Like yesterday, Rodon, they did that same thing where they just stood in there, hung in there, and they were like, no, we're not just going to start taking bad hacks. They forced him to pitch. But man, Kikuchi 9Ks, the pitching for this baseball team is incredible. It's unbelievable that I thought that there would be some signs of positive regression, and I guess Gausman today, who I'm going to go see again. So come on, Kevin. 3 in a row
it's got to be better.
3 in a row. You're getting real nervous, and I don't even care your name's Kevin Gausman. 3 horrific starts in a row, and you feel quite bad, especially since they're trotting him out there. They're not even doing, like, the fake injury thing. He throws 3 bad ones in a row, and then all of a sudden you're going to hear, like, oh, actually, he's had this thing that's been bothering him. You're like, oh, okay, sure. But, man, 9 strikeouts, and I think I've said something similar to this before, but, like, man, Kikuchi, this is what Kikuchi now means to me. Not only has he like added a third pitch, that curveball is disgusting this season. Like it's actually working for him. Nobody can touch it. Nobody can hit it. We always knew that he had the 97 nasty stuff, like where he's just like, oof, that fastball is disgusting. And then he could throw the slider, break you off that way. So he always had those 2 things. He had the stuff. Everybody knew Kikuchi as like the stuff guy. But now all of a sudden he's throwing this curveball and it's very early returns. I'm not trying to say that this, you know, maybe the curveball normalizes a little bit here, but so far since debuting it, nobody can hit it. So now you got Yusei Kikuchi, who's got 3 nasty pitches. Whoo! That's a formula for 9 strikeouts against the Yankees. Like, he was making Aaron Judge and Juan Soto.
Oh, yeah.
Look idiotic at the plate.
Volpe had some of the worst at-bats. Like, he made him look like an idiot.
Yes. Struck out Aaron Judge swinging twice.
Yeah.
It was like, whoa, he blew it by him. Yeah. Blew it by him again. So Kikuchi looking this way is incredible for this team. But ultimately, I think that right now he is, he's my favorite Blue Jays player. I don't have like, again, I'm not a little kid, so I don't go to the ballpark being like, you're my favorite, mister. But I have like a special soft spot for Yusei Kikuchi. Like, I really like Bassett. I really like Kikuchi. But man, Kikuchi, the reason why I think it's such a soft spot is, myself included, like, I was a part of this 100%, like, completely wrote him off. Was like, this guy is done. Get this guy out of town. I was fully there. No more Kikuchi. No more Kikuchi. One of the worst signings ever. New Tanner Roark. Tanner Roark Hall of Fame. All this different stuff. It's like, man, one is, this is why guys with supreme talent and athleticism continue to get chances in sports, right? Like, when people are like, it's not fair because this guy was a first-round pick. He keeps getting chances somewhere else. It's like, yeah, because maybe that happens where you unlock that talent. But Kikuchi will always remind me that when I'm getting ready to write a guy off, and some of it is just like being a sports fan, so I'm not going to be like, oh, how dare anybody be critical of athletes or give them more time or give them more of a chance. No, say what you want to say, but it will always kind of sit there with me mentally of, oh, right, you say Kikuchi happened. Like, next time I'm thinking about writing somebody off and being like, this guy's never, it's never going to happen for him here, I am always going to remember you say Kikuchi and the drastic shift, the unbelievably, like, the unbelievable divide between the way that I felt about Yusei Kikuchi when he was sitting in the dugout and you couldn't even really use him as a reliever. The guy that just couldn't throw strikes to the guy that pumps strikes by Aaron Judge in critical moments. Yeah, no, it's incredible.
What was the deal with his, first off, I like when they play the Lisa Loeb clip when he strikes guys out. They go, Yusei, which is always really good. Cool. But what was the deal on TV? Because I was at the game, as you said, like, when he was like, the trainer came out and looked at him for a bit. So what was that?
He stepped off the mound weird at the start of the sixth.
Okay.
Which, by the way, and I will pump, I'll admit it. He starts the sixth, and I go, why are they doing this? Why are they letting him see him the third time through? And then he's kind of, he steps off the mound, and he's doing the thing, and I went, no.
It was just like a muscle thing? It just looked like he was stretching out a little bit.
So, again, it's theories. I don't know. Did they reference it in the post game? Did they talk about it? Nobody even asked him a question about it? I don't know. It's weird. Buck thought it was a cramp.
Okay.
They went out twice to visit him, but then he finished the inning.
Yes.
So I don't think it was anything serious.
Yeah, yeah.
He was likely very, very fine. But yeah, it was, there was a hot second there where you're like, man, no. But yeah, that was basically it. What was it like, by the way, before I get into the negatives, the parts that are frustrating me? Because those are positive. Jays have won three series in a row. Chance to sweep the Yankees today. I had other plans for today and I scrapped them because I told Ennis, I'm like, I gotta get down to the ballpark today. Because to see the Jays potentially sweep the Yankees is too much to pass up. Like, I want to be there for that. That's good vibes. That's how you start to win people back over, is you sweep the Yankees. Like, that's an undeniable thing. Three series wins in a row, you sweep the Yankees. Like, now you start to get people a little bit excited. Then you get that off day, you get the extra 24 hours of just positivity cycle. That's good stuff. But yeah, so please tell me that you get hammered. Because, yeah, you're big, tall. You're what, 6'5", 6'4"?
6'4". I'll now be honest.
You'll be honest. You're 6'4".
I want to say, like,
6'4", ginger guy.
I like to think that I've endeared myself to your audience pretty well between lying about my height and talking about reality television.
I told you, though, lying about your height is the horrific stuff for being a guy 6'4".
I feel like being a Yankees fan, lying about my height as a tall guy.
Armin lies about his height every day, but it's understandable because he's 5'6".
I feel like I'm losing some fans on your show today.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, crushing beers. It's always funny. Here's what I'll say. So I go with a buddy of mine who's a high school buddy of mine, who we were both Yankees fans in high school and, like, we're Yankees weirdos. So we
so
go
cool.
a couple times a year and just, you know, we're there and whatever. But every time we go, it's the same greeting every time. We come into whatever section and we sit down in our Yankees jerseys and someone in the section goes, uh-oh. And then my buddy goes, no, don't worry, we're good ones. And then we're just kind of buddies with people in the section anyway. People aren't really too mad about it.
Ew.
Yeah. And then we crush beers. I will say, here's a weird thing, too. The last two games I've gone to, people sitting near me have bought me food.
What?
Yeah, two times ago, I was sitting next
to this is such a Toronto thing.
The drunkest guy in the stadium, and he came down with three ice cream helmets, and he was like, yeah, I don't need three. Do you want one? And then last night, a woman bought me four hot dogs for some reason.
Yeah, Looney Dog Night doesn't count because everybody buys. It's like, but everybody goes up there, buys a million, and then you walk over to your section, and you're like, hey, I'm a slob, and would you like some of these?
Yeah, she came down with 16 hot dogs. But I don't know why would you give it to the guy in the Yankees? I mean, thank you.
Because here's the thing. They don't think you're from here. If you would have told them, I'm actually from here, they'd be like, oh, gross. You're not getting an ice cream helmet. Yeah. This is it. Okay, so did you see this news about Up Express?
No.
It is the most embarrassing thing. The Up Express is cutting service at Bloor Station And not like not entirely, just they're limiting their stops at Bloor Station. And then what's the one that's right after Bloor? Anybody want to pull that up? There's one more station between Bloor and the airport when you take the Up Express. And it's like, hey, guess what? You may have noticed that getting around in the city is kind of a pain in the ass. Like all of our transit is difficult. We've got, you know, two subway lines and they're pretty limiting. Streetcars are a nightmare. Traffic is a nightmare. There's just no way to move around. But one thing that we have is that you can go to the Up Express and get to the airport and it's like
on time.
On time.
Immediately. It's nice. Easy.
It's easy. It's quick. It's reasonably priced. All this different stuff.
Are they ruining the Up?
Yeah. An old Dougie came out and was like, we're really proud to announce that they were going to go every 50 minutes from Union Station. We're doing it. Guess what it does? It shaves 2 minutes. By the way, it's like, call the Up Express. It's the express train. You dumbos. And they've decided that lopping 2 minutes off for the people that are at Union who want to go back and forth to the airport, that is more critical than having an equal amount of stops at Bloor Station and the one that's in between, which, again, no one's pulled up for me yet. Weston, that's it. Yeah, there we go. So Weston and Bloor, those people in those areas, the locals who want to get to the airport workers who often, most airport workers, they live near Bloor Station. That was like part of the area of the city where people live when they want to, you know, go work up at the airport. They've lopped off the service for the locals to try to make it more impressive, quote unquote, to people who are from out of town going like, hey, look, Union going straight up to the airport. Airport to Union every 15 minutes. Optically, if you're a tourist, you're like, wow, this is really nice. But guess what it does? It screws people who lives here, which is the way that we operate in this city is everything for people who aren't from here because we so desperately want to be liked that we buy ice cream helmets for guys in Yankees uniforms. We're like, please say that you liked it here. Yeah, please go back home and tell everyone how great Toronto is because that's what we get off on. That's our kink is like, hey, people from other places, say you love Toronto. You know what we'll do well on social media? Make a clip as a foreign person, like anybody from anywhere else on planet Earth. Make a video of you saying that food in Toronto is great. Food in Toronto is incredible. Guess what you're going to do? Go Toronto viral. You're going to be on all the Toronto Lifes and this and that. You'll be everywhere, baby, because that is our kink. Whoa, did people like us from somewhere else? Yay. Hey, is it good here? Are we actually trying to make it better here? Well, no, but we're making it good enough that when the tourists come through.
But someone else called us a world-class city.
Yeah, that's it, man. That's it. It's the same thing over and over again. Anyway, it's my biggest gripe with this place. It's like we should want to, like Masai Ujiri tried to teach us, like be better, like believe in Toronto. And people, Toronto should want it to be better. And it's not. The thing that pissed me off about yesterday's baseball game. I know John Schneider said that Jordan Romano was going to come back in a save situation. He painted that picture for everyone involved. No one should have been surprised. But Jordan Romano, through one inning, over two starts, or two appearances, sorry, two appearances in AAA, he pitched one full inning, he walked four batters, he gave up a hit, he had one strikeout. And I think he hit a batter. So it's like he put on all these base runners when he was down in Buffalo. I texted some people being like, I was ready as Romano. And they were like, might need a little bit more time or whatever. He comes up here and it's the New York Yankees. The New York Yankees with killers in their lineup. And John Schneider decides this is the time to throw Jordan Romano in the fire. Like, I get it. Sink or swim. It's professional sports. Blah, 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 blah. That was idiotic. What are we doing here? And like nobody asked him about it after the game. Like what's happening here? Like I looked through the post game and it's just like, yep, okay, whatever, status quo. Good to have Jordan Romano back. Yes, good to have Jordan Romano back. Maybe let him ease in a slightly lower leverage situation than the team that you could be fighting for the division in his first appearance back. And guess what happened? It took a miracle for them not to tie that baseball game. A miracle play from Dalton Varsho that you say is 25%. I say is closer to 5 to 10%. I don't see that play happen very often in baseball. Like, Varsho, excellent read, excellent
jump. The
jump
was amazing.
Awesome play by Dalton Varsho. Truly, truly spectacular
play. You're a big Varsho guy.
I just thought, yeah. I am. I'm trying to root for Varsho, but it's just hard because the trade was so bad.
I like it.
For them to put him in that situation where it took that miracle play. And then also, by the way, like a sneaky underrated play by Ernie Clement, who had to really pick it to get it over to get the eight hitter. Mm-hmm. Like if Varsho does not make that play, and we don't need to like butterfly effect, ooh, what could happen? what would have happened conclusively is the game would have been tied. It would have been tied with the Yankees having the go-ahead run at second with no outs. All of a sudden, maybe they're like, well, you know, Trevino, he hits that ball into the dirt, which gets picked by Ernie, and he throws it over the first. Maybe he gets the first out. And all of a sudden, you've got a runner on third with only one out and the opportunity for them to get two guys at the top of their lineup to drive him in. Or, sorry, the nine hitter and then Volpe to drive him in. Like, I just don't get it. I just don't understand it. Anyways, for me, I talked yesterday about how Jordan Romano is coming back into a bit of a strange situation where, you, like, Jimmy Garcia has been incredible in his absence and was incredible again last night. And he looks out of this world good. He looks like a closer. He does. He looks like a closer. The bullpen's great. The pitching is great. What is the leash for Romano as a closer if he does struggle? To me, yesterday was not like a notch in the, oh, Romano can do the job cap. It was, oh, it's not a blown save because he didn't end up actually losing. Like, he did get the out. So credit to you, Jordan Romano. Great to have you back. Like, big fan. Love seeing the lights, all of that. That's great.
Yeah, the lights are cool.
But ultimately, like, if you have another bad outing, the outing you just had was bad. I'm not giving you, like, good outing, good job. You closed the baseball game. You escaped. You escaped from, like, major criticism from your manager, real spotlight questions on the closer. And I'm not forgetting that just because I think, again, I'm a process versus results person. The process there, to me, was asinine. The result was fortuitous. And so, yeah, going to be kind of curious what they do moving forward with him and how this is going to operate. But, yeah, I didn't love that. Anyway, I want to take a quick break. I want to come back and talk a little bit about yesterday's play-ins. I didn't get to watch the first one, but I do have thoughts on the teams. And I did watch the Warriors get the brakes beaten off of them. What the Warriors need to learn from the Lakers. Next. So, obviously, I didn't get to watch the Lakers-Pelicans game yesterday. I think that's pretty clear. It was Blue Jays game on, and also the Leafs are playing. I was barely keeping an eye on the Jays, and by barely, I mean, like, quite a bit. Baseball is such a great secondary screen experience because, like, you really can take it in.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a big believer of, like, you can't watch multiple things at once. Like, if you watch two games, you're not watching any. But that doesn't apply with baseball. Mm-hmm. Baseball is like, yep, I had it on and I was looking at it and I saw the things that happened and I was able to track it pretty easily. Plus, I felt like yesterday was kind of fortuitous in terms of when the intermissions were for hockey and when like some real action spots were in the Jays game where I got to sit there with a volume and full attention. But yeah, I missed like the entirety of the Lakers-Pelicans game. Lakers squeaked by them, but I did watch the Zion highlights. And I've got a few thoughts off of this. One is, it really made me sad to think that that might be the most optimistic we ever get to be about Zion Williamson's career. Because that's 40 points in a game where he's starting to put it all together. And I watched the highlights. I watched every single one of his buckets. The ferocity and athleticism in which he was able to get to the paint. The frustration level of the Lakers' body language when they're watching him over and over to like, get to the, almost all the buckets are like inside the paint. Where it's like he's getting inside, he's doing like the little fadeaway in the middle of the key.
Yeah.
He's getting to just the basket, he's throwing it down. It was just like play after play after play where nobody could stay in front of him. But Zion is now 24 years old. And this is potentially another injury. And, like, I hope he's fine. I don't know if we have any updates on what it actually is with Zion.
Hamstring was what they said, but I think it says tests coming Wednesday.
It just doesn't seem like his body is going to cooperate with the ability and the mentality they had in a meaningful game. And I went, man, this is sad. This feels like Mike Trout is very different because Mike Trout obviously built his own tomb around him when it came to his career. But Zion, like that ability, that mix of athleticism, the just entertaining style which he has, the guy who's very different. It's a league that sometimes I'll complain a little bit because I feel like everyone tries to be the same thing in the NBA now.
Yeah, it's too homogenous for sure.
Exactly. When we were growing up, the cool thing about it was like you had a Muggsy Bogues and you had a Shaq.
Yeah, you had a guy who played in the post and you had the mid-range assassin and you had this. Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why I kind of like the return of the big man a little bit in the NBA that, you know, and the rules are changing a little bit back. Guys are trying to find a different spot. But like Zion is a one of one where it's like, what position is he? Oh, he doesn't really have one. Mm-hmm. There is no real position. What does he do? Well, he does many things. Like he's just a freak of nature.
Is he super tall? No.
Yeah, it just kind of crushed me. It's like, you know, I see actually right now, Brian Windhorst is up on my TV talking about what's the latest on Zion. So maybe he's saying something there. But either way, I can't be optimistic about what it's going to look like. All I know is that when my brother sent me that text, Zion is going off.
You knew it was doomed?
No, I actually felt the opposite, where I was like, man, that makes me so happy. Like, can you imagine that we're getting this guy? He's like, Zion has 40. He's dominating the Lakers. Like, whew, I wish it would happen. That being said, for the Lakers, this is the worst thing that could have happened to you. I'm sorry, but it is. You squeak by the Pelicans. And now what? You know what now what? Now what is that you are going to be playing the Denver Nuggets. Congrats. Congrats. The team that absolutely owns you. You've got no shot. This isn't going to be anything. Like, they swept you last year, and people are saying it's a close sweep. It's not a rivalry. It's a domination. Jokic owns this team. There's just no way that it's going to happen. My only point of curiosity with the Lakers now is this. Is like, if the Nuggets beat you so bad again, if they sweep you again, is that going to force some sort of change with the Lakers? Like, are they going to evaluate this and say, maybe we got to switch it up? Because, like, what are you supposed to do? You've brought back multiple iterations of this, like, LeBron AD team. They tried, you know, this year, oh, well, you know what? They're going to have certain players emerge, and now we've done this, and D'Angelo Russell's on a hot streak. It's like, ultimately, you're not going to improve your chances of beating Denver, and you continue to kind of be trapped by the LeBron stuff where you don't get to rebuild or replenish or try and take a step in that direction either. And part of me goes like, hey, man, you get to watch LeBron James, so, you know, who cares? And Anthony Davis did take a big step forward this season in terms of, like, playing healthy and giving them minutes.
Played games.
Yeah.
For the first time
in a while. But I wonder if there's anything that can happen in this future series that will actually impact the future of the Los Angeles Lakers. And they couldn't get too cute with it. I understand it. But realistically, the thing for them to have done is not win that Pelicans game and then try to beat Sacramento and end up facing OKC in the first round. Because then they could have, like, tried to build some positive momentum. They could have beat OKC. I think that would have been actually on the table. You know, LeBron going in against a team that doesn't have any, like, real interior defenders, and AD and, like, there was a path there for them. But against Jokic, like, there is no path. So I guess my point of curiosity with the Lakers is, like, can something actually happen? And I'm not overly sure that it will. I know, like, you know, Armin wearing his Lakers hat today, like, he's, I don't know, you're a Kobe guy, so it's like you've never really been fully in on LeBron anyway. Like, you're more of a LeBron than an MJ guy. I think there is that. But it's like, I don't know. You guys are just in a weird place. You're in a weird place where you get the most amount of coverage. Everybody talks about LeBron still. Everybody talks about the Lakers still. You know you can't win. You know there's no hope. Like, I guess you just, like, are comforted by the fact that you're a Lakers fan and that when LeBron leaves, like, you'll get somebody else anyway. And, like, it's just, like, there's no such thing as a long-term rebuild, really, for the Lakers. Like,
we had a pretty bad rebuild after Kobe left.
Yeah.
And during those last couple years. But you'd go and chase a third star this summer. You have a bunch of picks. You have Rui. You have Austin Reeves you could trade. D'Lo maybe. You go try to get Trae Young. That's all you do. You chase stars.
Yeah.
That's LA.
That's what I mean. Yes. If the big plan is chase Trae Young, then I can tell you that it's a bad big plan. It's like a disaster. Anyway, the more interesting thing from the play-ins to me by far, because, like, yeah, the Lakers just remain the Lakers. It's like, congrats. You beat a team barely. That lost on. Sorry, what do you want to say?
Are you going to move on to the Warriors?
Because
we should talk about Reggie Miller really quick.
Oh, yeah. I do want to talk about Reggie Miller in this game. Yeah, okay. So, I didn't see the game. I was doing other stuff, then I had to do Leafs talk. But I did see this go viral, and I did want to play this. This is like an ultimate funny. Okay, so Reggie Miller, it's at the very end of the game. And what, there's been an intentional foul by the Pelicans, right? And they foul Anthony Davis?
Yeah, 2-point game. There's seconds left, so they're sending AD to the line.
Okay, so there's two. How much time is left?
Let me double check this just to confirm.
I think there was 4 seconds.
Yeah.
4 seconds?
Yeah.
Okay, 4 seconds left in the game. Intentional foul up 2. And here's the analysis we get from Reggie Miller.
Here's things that you talk about on the bus as players. If he makes the first one, you're up 3. Do you try to purposely miss the second one, knowing that they don't have any timeouts?
They have no timeouts.
And they've got to go coast to coast, because as soon as you miss it, time is going to start as soon as it's touched. Or do you just make them both be up four and game over? These are things that are discussed as teams.
The best part of this clip is that he says, or go up four and game over. These are the things that are discussed
on the bus.
Oh, no, these are the things that are discussed where you're. So you, Reggie Miller, you win that basketball game and he hit the two free throws and you walk up to him in the dressing room and you're like, hey,
Rick Smits goes up to you and is like, hey, maybe you should have missed.
You know, I know we just won because we went up four and we sealed the game because it became a two possession ball game. But yeah, I was wondering if you were going to miss intentionally the free throw and give them a chance at winning the game or at tying the game. Like, I kept it a one possession game with some time left on the clock. Like, what were your considerations for that? Like, you look at them and stare and go, pardon me. So here's my forgiveness to a guy like Reggie Miller. You're doing this entire game and it's closing out. And I do think that all broadcasters try to keep you a little bit engaged.
Yeah. And, trying to add a little bit of juice.
Yeah,
and
they
like,
try to keep the juice, you know? We see it in football all the time, right? Where now they at least have the advantages of the point spread and the betting. And so people will kind of like sometimes not even just hint, sometimes kind of like outright say it. That's a tough one though.
That is a tough one.
Saying a tough one or game over, like closing it that way, but then trying to, it's like a two,
over.
But no, but it's kind of like a two part thing because one is he's basically trying to be, you know, J.J. Redick taking the, this is what, hey, guys, you want the inside scoop of what the players
are? I played the game.
Yeah, I played the game. So here's what I'll tell you, is that we talk about it on the bus, about missing.
Let me pull back the curtain.
Let me pull back the curtain on whether we should win or maybe lose. How we talk, we discuss said things in playoff games. And then, the final thing is him basically answering his own question, which is incredible. Okay, so
one last thing. Kevin Harlan is my favorite announcer in basketball, and I feel so bad for him having to sit there and be like, wouldn't you just want to say, like, Reggie, what are you talking about? And he's like,
No, because I think that...
play the good
part of being a great play-by-play guy...
100%.
...is being a great guy.
That's a partner. That's why they always say partner. That's partner.
Yeah. Like... I don't think, like, how many jerks are play-by-play guys? I'm sure that if I asked this to play-by-play guys and gave them a couple beers, they'd be like, oh, this guy sucks. But part of that job is, are you a sick hang? Are you someone that's always elevating the other guy and making them feel like the star and making it feel enjoyable? If you're listening to your play-by-play guy and he doesn't feel like someone you want to hang out with, then I don't think you got a great play-by-play guy.
For sure. I want to hang out with Kevin Harlan.
Yeah, that's
so
what I mean.
So badly.
Yeah. He's drunk. Yeah.
Amazing.
He's the man. That's the thing. I've had Kevin Harlan on multiple pods. He seems like an incredible guy. But I think that that's sort of the way it is with most play-by-play guys is they get it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're correct in your assessment of how hard would it be to be me? Getting dropped into that spot? Yeah. I think my reaction would have been like, wait, Reggie, so is your question, do they want to win? Or keep the game going?
Lesser man than Kevin Harlan wouldn't have been able to handle it.
I will admit, in Reggie, the closest thing I can get to a Reggie defense is, I will admit this, sometimes as a sports bettor, I'll have action on a game, and like weirdly in the back of my mind, I'll kind of like want the...
You're doing the math. You're doing the what does it take?
No, I'm saying like instead of just winning the bet, I'll be like, a sick part of me is, I hope the team I'm betting against gets like a first down and this like feeling lasts a little longer, like that the game extends a little longer.
You're just chasing the...
None of you guys bet though, so...
I do, but you're chasing the excitement.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's like you're...
I just want my bets to win.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Early payout is great, you know?
Words in English language.
No, it's great, but it's like, okay, cool, like it's done. It's to me, the point of gambling is not always
to
just
feel
the playing.
Something.
Yeah, It's not just the money. It's the feeling. It's the chase. And so, if you extend the chase a little longer, it's like, ooh, it's all right. But then all of a sudden, it's so funny because whenever that happens and I lose, I'm like, what the hell was I doing? Like, I feel like it's my fault. I'm like, why was I not just hoping for turnover on downs immediately? Like, game over. So that's maybe what Reggie had money on the game is what I'm saying.
There you go.
Okay, so the Warriors lose. And they lose in horrific fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I did turn off the final couple of minutes because I was actually going to watch it to the end, but then I realized that I wasn't going to see Stephen Clay get interviewed on the floor after they lose, so I was like, what am I doing? Turn this off. But when I left the game, Clay was 0 for 9 from the field and 0 for 5 from 3.
He missed one more 3 after you stopped watching.
So he finishes 0 for 10, 0 for 6.
Yeah.
So Clay Thompson, at the very end, this is the worst thing, man, is sports are so cruel. Clay Thompson is going to have one of the greatest careers as any Warrior ever could have had.
One of the best shooters of all time.
Game 6, Clay.
Yep.
But that was in what, 2016? Mm-hmm. It's almost a decade removed. And so what are a lot of people going to remember with Clay? It's what happened more recently. Like, sports is the meanest, cruelest thing when it comes to the way that we remember the ends of guys' careers. We should be allowed to have the Men in Black stick, you know? Everybody, sure. That, you know what? Everybody that left the arena last night should have gotten, like, cracked in the head with a stick, like me and that homeless guy who was walking with it. It's like, you should have just gotten, like, concussed, and then you're like, what happened in game 6? You were there, and you're like, I don't really remember. Or, like, there's, like, a, you know, you could, like, yeah, you just roofie yourself, essentially, at the end of that game to, like, forget what happened with Clay so that you don't have that memory in your head. Like, it's awful, awful that that's the way that the Splash Brothers are going to end. Because if you're the Warriors, here's the one thing. You got to learn from the Lakers. You cannot become what the Lakers are, which is the dinosaur team that's paying for what happened in the past and the name and the pedigree. Because Klay Thompson, I know he was playing well leading in the play-in, but it's over. It's done. You can't bring Klay Thompson back. You can't go on the luxury tax for this team. And my point of curiosity with these guys, though, is like, hey, not Splash Brothers are done. That era is done conclusively. Like, it's over. What is your pivot now? Like, what are you doing? Because personally, and I, again, watching that game, I keep going, boy, you guys really won't trade Jonathan Kuminga's 14 points, eh? Like, you really won't trade Jonathan Kuminga's sulky body language when things go poorly. I know, again, he's put together incredible stretches, and there are times where you look at Kuminga and you say, damn, that guy looks really good. But to me, you know who I think he kind of is? Wiggins. I feel like he's the next Wiggins, where he's a super athletic guy. He's going to put together some performances where you're like, damn, that was awesome. But then the overall body of work, you're going to look at it and go, wait, what exactly did we have here? Moody is fine, but I'm tired of this whole thing of, like, the Warriors have all these young guys. It's like, man, Sacramento is the team that everybody was dying to play. They're clearly the weakest team in the rest of the field, and they just body bagged you by 30 points. It was never even a contest. Poor Steph is running out there trying to take some hero shots just in hopes of keeping his team within, you know, 10 points in the third quarter. They got Warriors yesterday, where the Warriors used to kill teams in the third quarter, and the Sacramento Kings came out and did that to you. And so I don't think that you bring Clay back. I think that's pretty conclusive. But I think if you're the Warriors, you got to try to make one more push with Steph Curry. Steph is still a great player. He's still one of the best players in the NBA, and I think that his game is going to age well. And you can't continue to do this two streams thing, like this idiotic plan that they've had this entire time where they got one foot in, one foot out. You know who else tried to do that? Toronto Raptors. And look where they are now. Toronto Raptors tried to do the same thing. They got Scottie Barnes, and they went, well, we're probably supposed to rebuild now. You know, maybe we got to take a step back. Maybe we got to trade some of these guys. Nope. They got sentimental, and they kept players, and they tried to be like, oh, we're going to compete and try to be like a high floor team, but also Scottie Barnes, and we're not really sure whose team it is. And then all of a sudden you end up where you go, wait, you got a Pacers first round pick for Pascal Siakam? You got the Knicks sixth man for OG? Okay. All right. Get on board. Should be good. Should be good. Like, quickly here. I think that they've got to cash in some of these younger guys, and I think that it centers around Kuminga. I think that this offseason, the Warriors need to be serious, and they need to shop Jonathan Kuminga and try to figure out a way to get him somewhere where somebody will give you an actual asset. My thing is I still think that they missed out on Siakam. Like, he would have been a great fit with Steph Curry. He would have been a great fit with those guys. He could have helped supplant some of the Draymond Green role in terms of a guy who is a really good passer, a guy who is unselfish, a guy who will dig in and play some defense, a guy who is still looking for a contract, a guy who can actually knock down a shot and create some of his own offense, unlike Draymond Green. I think that that's probably a missed opportunity for them in hindsight. Like, I'd be very curious to see what they can get for Jonathan Kuminga or who they can get for Jonathan Kuminga. But either way, my hope is that, like, you are you are obviously beholden to Steph Curry. You can't trade Steph Curry. He's not going anywhere. He's going to retire a Warrior. He means so much to that place. Yeah. But I don't think that you can go into the mode that the Lakers went into with LeBron, where they're like, hey, you're running the place. You're deciding the stuff. Steph doesn't seem as geared for that, like, as others. But I'm guessing that he would stump for them bringing back Klay Thompson. And I think they have to put their foot down there, but say the compromise is the Moody's of the world are on the table. The, you know, the other guys are on the table. Steph did have that one quote, though, of, like, we can't keep doing the same thing over and over again. So
I will say, though, all of the post-game quotes from, like, Kerr to Draymond or whatever, and granted, this is just, it's probably their longtime teammates or whatever, but everybody was saying, we want to bring Klay back, and I expect us to bring Klay back.
Yeah, they can't say anything.
100%, 100%. But I'm just saying, like, and I guess when you've had that deep of a run, obviously, like, there's all sorts of stuff that ties into it. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see because, I mean, he also, I mean, what even does a Klay Thompson contract look like anywhere?
Yeah.
It's very weird. A thought that I had while you were saying this is you were saying, you know, the Warriors got caught in between two timelines, and look where the Raptors got when they were trying to do two timelines. Do you think two timelines is even possible?
I think that you can do what the Raptors did at the beginning of the We the North era, which is start to get, you know, think that you're about to rebuild, but then you're starting to get more competitive quickly. And
right,
then,
and then
you know,
pivot and be, and yeah.
And I do think that it is still better in an overall sense that when you are developing young players that you try to put talent around them and make the team better right away.
Sure.
Like, I think that the mistake of the Pistons and the Charlottes of the world is
too bad for too long.
And frankly, if I'm going to be honest about the Raptors, and what kind of scares me is you're never really going to be able to bring in the free agents of your choice. Like you're always going to be kind of hoping for you're picking through the scrap pile. And so your drafting has to be so incredibly solid and your development has to be so awesome because you're going to have to grow guys internally on losing teams that might not have strong cultures. And that's the problem with the Pistons. And that's why they overpay for guys like Monty Williams is they're like, maybe our coach can be the trendsetter,
the culture
like the
center.
And you go, nah, it isn't really the way it is. And so when you start to suck and you lose year over year, you develop bad habits and you develop a bad culture, and the guys that are supposed to be your franchise players, like they don't, like it's the Lonzo Ball thing
or
LaMelo Ball thing.
They don't know how to win.
It's like, I don't think he knows how to win, and I don't think he'll ever be a winner. And I don't think that Charlotte is going to become a contender on, you know, his merit. But is anybody going to go sign in Charlotte? I don't believe so.
Man, the Warriors could have drafted LaMelo. Imagine LaMelo on a good team winning stuff. That's terrible.
That'll always be the LaMelo,
sliding door. Quickly, you mentioned the We the North thing, as Mike had mentioned in our kind of pre-show
Mikey,
email.
Where'd you see that?
Just the Raptors tweeted it.
The Raptors tweeted
it. Yeah. Well, they just sent out like a little GIF, and then there was like no information on it, so I did a little research. And 2014.
Wait, so it was just a GIF?
It was just a GIF. They just said 10 years, We the North.
Okay, so and was it the flag?
Of course, it was the flag.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
10 years since We the North. I know that didn't bother Sammy, but that has. That boggled my mind.
10 years is crazy. I like that. What was your question, though, that you wrote down for this?
What was your memory? Like, your best memory of the We the North era, but without the championship included?
Well, yeah, it's hard to remove the championship. No, it was like...
There's also what's the best, worst, like, brands in sports?
No, best, worst brands in sports, I don't want to use too much, but, like, this is the question of it. So, one is...
Do they need a new era?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Is it time to pivot and move forward? One, my favorite We the North thing was literally the very beginning of it, was when you started to see the branding and the fact that the Raptors were starting to win and that team had a real attitude. Like, there was an attitude of y'all slept on us and we're up here and we're going to ball and we're going to play hard.
And it resonated with the fans.
And the fans just loved it. It was just like blue collar basketball.
Bench mob.
And guys cared. Yeah. Like, guys really all of a sudden seemed to embrace the Raptors differently. No, I think it really started with like Gravis Vasquez and Chuck Hayes and, you know, like obviously DeMar and Kyle, but I'm saying, like, I don't think those guys ever get enough credit. Like, the first iteration of the team that came in here and then, like, the F Brooklyn stuff. And then it was so crushing when they lost to Washington because it really felt like, oh, man, they lost that attitude. Like, you can't keep that swagger. The Brooklyn series was excusable. The Washington one wasn't. And then they entered that, like, secondary phase where it was like the bench mobs and they started to develop players, and that was awesome. That was really cool. But... yeah, actually, you know, I might explore this thought a little bit more when I have time, but I don't think We the North goes anywhere ever.
I think it's weird to separate the two, honestly.
I think it's a part of who we are now. Anyway, subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars. We'll see you tomorrow.